Accession number 26561, Reel 13.
Wing Commander Bernard, Reel 13. Now, we were talking about your time after you'd moved into Stalag Luft 3 at Sargon, into the NCO's compound, or centre camp. We were talking about food, various odd incidents and amusing things with regard to the cooking arrangements, really. If you'd like to continue, I think you've got another example.
Yes. Part of the... when the Red Cross parcels were coming through, and they used to vary considerably, you might go for a long time without parcels, and for this reason I led a combine of 10, and in the days when the parcels were coming through one a fortnight, there was only a week's food in each of these parcels, but they would come in, and we thought that once a fortnight was quite a good regular unusual amount. And being 10 of us, one of us would in turn would give up his parcel, put his name on it, and it would stay in store unopened but with a man's name on, and then in the more difficult times we could fall back on this reserve, and one parcel in 10 was easy to manage. A two-man combine couldn't do this sort of thing. But there were clever people around clever men around who could take a parcel, and some of the things were more desirable than others. For instance, some people couldn't stand yeast fight paste, extract paste.
Marmite, yeast.
Marmite, yes, that's the word. And others didn't like cocoa, and these all had various values and would trade, and one man, if he's clever enough, will go around and he'll finish up with two parcels on a barter principle.
Now, how did the bartering system work? I mean,
the chap would go and said, who would like two Marmite tins for a tin of jam, you know, and so on. And we thought this was, and the men would finish up with two parcels, the trade man, yes. And we said, this is unfair to the community. And we set up and also some would swap chocolate for cigarettes, and this was the sort of thing. And we said, let's get this on a good footing. And we formed, the Germans gave us a tiny little cubbyhole room in the cookhouse, and allocated, they agreed that we could do this. And we called it Food Echo, an abbreviation of, or amalgamation of, food and tobacco. And the Food Echo company was controlled, and they would decide on the number of points each item of food would be worth. And chocolates and cigarettes were an equal thing. Some swapped their cigarettes for chocolate, and others swapped chocolate for cigarettes, but on a points basis. And if there was a surplus of cigarettes, then the value of cigarettes dropped. A sort of market for the point scheme, and you would be allocated whatever you put into the kitty was very good for points. And we also used for escape purposes, we were able to milk off these points and the commodities that went with them, because some of these items would be stored, particularly escaping food, and we could milk off 10% of this hoard.
Now, did you have any? So the officers were paid; that they had an allowance, a Lagergeld.
Yes.
Now, did the NCOs?
No.
I didn't think so. But the officers say that there was a levy amongst them for money to go to the NCOs.
They could, if they wished. The officers could, if they wished, allocate some of their so-called Lagergeld to their NCOs.
Were you aware, did it happen much?
Only spasmodically from just one of our officers. We had three officers on our crew.
So it wasn't done generally, as far as you
it
know.
It wasn't done...
It wasn't a sort of levy across offices that they could take part in or not, and then we'll just go to all the NCOs and the... You know, to be shared.
Oh, no, nothing like that, no.
This was individually from your offices
to
your...
You, yes.
And did you get any from your three?
No, very seldom.
Now...
I think I... yes, one officer in particular, he was very good.
Now, any other... So you didn't have any sort of money or camp shop or anything like that
the
officers did?
We relied on the Red Cross, and the other thing about combines was that if anyone got a parcel from home, which frequently collected a fair amount of chocolate, we would divide that parcel amongst the 10 of us.
Now, what did you get parcels from home?
Yeah.
Were they from the family, or
from the family?
And what about Bond
children? Monitored the. It was from your family, and offloaded and adjusted by the Red Cross. In other words, if the family were just sent them 10 pullovers, you know, all knitted by Auntie Flo and so on, they were useless. Although they were undone, we used to undo these knitted garments and make blankets with a crochet hook made from a toothbrush handle.
So what would you get in your parcels from home? You?
Personally, I'd get the chocolate and this, I think. I had three slide rules sent out to me and they were extracted by the Germans.
Hidden. They were meant to be hidden, but the Germans had found.
Yes. And so there were generally pajamas. Some had sheets. Some had side caps. Various things like that.
And they were sent by a family. What about local organisations or do-gooding organisations? Yeah, if you see what I mean by that.
I used to get cigarettes from my old firm, a company that automatic telephone companies were very good. And they also paid me a sort of nominal amount of wages, which were stored up for me when I returned.
I will come back to that. Now, so anything else about life? Were the recreations any different in Sagan?
Yes. There were more huts, and of course that meant there was a better a football team from each hut or a rugby team from them. And then they'd have races where the one prisoner, called it horse racing, with all the other bets and things that went on. And the horse racing day, Ascot Day, the horse would be a beefy prisoner of war with a lightweight man riding him as a jockey. the whole thing was... And, of course, rugby matches were good when you had... But you needed parcels to be able to put too much energy, enough energy into that game.
You needed the extra food?
Yes, for good
Did you
sport.
Play much rugby?
Yes, I did, yes. I had in my parcel from home, I asked for my Spalding rugger head cap, air protector, which in fact I used on the long marches as air protection.
And what about? They built a theatre there now.
Yes.
Was that later on when they moved into the offices moved into the North Camp? Where was the theatre? Was it in the centre?
Oh, North Camp hadn't been built when we did
so
that.
So where was the theatre?
The first one. I don't know what happened in the officers' compound. I don't know whether they built a theatre to the same extent, but we were highly organised in the NCO centre camp, and the centre hut was with a Germans' agreement. We said. All the men out of there will be spread round the other huts, even if it amounts to overcrowding the other huts. And we tilted the floor, with their permission, we tilted the floor, dug an orchestra pit, and put up a proscenium arch, and proper staging and so on, and lighting. And I contributed dimmer switches for the lighting, which were in fact long tin cans with a rod, a lever, and fastened to this lever was a rod that dipped into salt water. and the deeper the rod went into the salt water, the better the lighting. Very dangerous, but very efficient. And they laid on all sorts of, had a whole number of a drama group, a comedy, a variety, and they were all...
Now, was, I mean, one way of telling whether this is the theatre that the officers had is, was Peter Butterworth and Rupert Davis, who were their officers, and they were in a lot of the theatre productions that I know of, were they in the ones that you were watching?
Oh, not the same people, no.
So they did have a theatre in the officers' camp, obviously, as
yes,
well.
Yes.
So what sort of production... Tell me what sort of
When they got cracking, the various companies, they call them companies, with their collection of chums who would try and act or did act, and some of them were quite brilliant, would put on the rehearse their plays and write out scripts and so on, and they would have to come to the stage. Well, they'd be penciled in as possible companies to show entertainment, and they would, how shall I put it? That's right. It was a 4 day, 4 or 5 day run, and the next day they would tear down the scenery. On the Saturday they'd tear down the scenery and have a dress rehearsal with a new scenery for the new oncoming one. But the stage before that, the dress rehearsal without dress, was vetted by the entertainment's company, by the entertainment's controllers, and they would see whether it was good enough to put on. The seats were all booked individually, and they were made out of good old Canadian Red Cross boxes, and you book your seat very properly and rightly. You would only have to go in the last minute, no scramble, and you had 4 days of performances.
Now, what were the shows like?
Oh, they were excellent, some of them, and they were quite brilliant.
What kind of thing? It was an idea. I know it's a long time ago, but...
Yes, dramas, various plays that had been done. And I took part in the Shakespeare one, where we, As You Like It, there's quite a big cast on that one. And I think Cy Grant, the guitarist, I don't know whether you know, he's a black Caribbean guitarist, but he was a flight lieutenant. Oh no, that comes later. That comes when centre camp changes over, but I'll come to that.
Now, but As You Like It wasn't then.
Yeah.
And tell me about As You Like It. What were you doing? What was your part?
I was the mad boy and one of the scenes. And other scenes, I was part of the nobleman.
And had you ever acted before?
Yes and no. I remember I took part of a Sunday school play on one occasion. That's as far back as it went. I wasn't a theatre type, really.
Now, were you involved behind the scenes as well? I mean,
yes,
you said about the dimmer switch, but I would imagine there's lots of things you could have helped with.
Yes, electrics and that sort of thing. And the other interesting thing was we hadn't got a proper piano, and we... eventually found out that one of the Germans had access to a broken down concert grand piano, which had got hammers missing. It was in dreadful shape, hadn't got strings in some of the keys, and we took this, we bought it with Lagergeld officially through the Germans, and we
so this is officers' money.
Yes, I suppose so, yes. I don't know how that was arrived at, but we got this one and we took over, and of course we had people who could make things, and some of the hammers were replaced with beechwood clothes pegs carved to the shape of a hammer, and we hadn't got felt, but we had blanket felt, and for the hammerheads we had of course a piano tuner in our midst, and we bought or got through the Red Cross, I think. Piano wires, and the keys were all cleaned and polished, and the French polisher came along. And we had an American who'd been shot down, an American in the RAF, who, Curly Hertzum, who was a brilliant concert pianist, and he would play classical music on this beautiful grand piano, which came up like new when it was finished. The orchestra, they had to produce mostly all their own music, had to be hand-copied and so on, and they all dressed up in their proper theatrical dinner dress, which was old French uniforms dyed with Indian ink, and the collars were white cardboard, bow ties made out of black service ties, and the whole thing had a proper conductor, and the instruments came from the Red Cross, and they had very good classical music put on. It was quite remarkable. And I think another funny one was some of the characters would dress up as attractive ladies, because they're quite young, you see, these characters. And they dress up fine, and a bunch of Poles and Czechoslovakians came in and said to them, they were newly shot down, and said, where are all these girls from? And they said, oh, they're from the Red Cross, they come and and of course they all shot round the back, these Poles, and waiting for these ladies to come out. No ladies ever came out. There were other fellows. But the interesting thing, and this is remarkable, although all those years, no homosexuality, it was completely taboo, and anybody, you know, it was a punishable offence in those days, and certainly there was no homosexuality. It couldn't be. We're so tightly packed together that somebody would split on if there had been any signs, would not have been tolerated, which is a very good discipline factor.
Was the absence of women a problem? I mean, did people...
Oh, yes. I mean, used to, when the lights went out, you'd hear all sorts of stories of their adventures and so on. I think one funny one was, again, Eric Galloway, the gas engineer. He said his girlfriend was... Paul, this is a story at night in the dark, when he said, my girl so-and-so, she was being looked after by a very wealthy and ancient millionaire, and he bought her a lovely flat, and he'd come round every Thursday in his Rolls Royce, and they'd go shopping, and the last thing they'd go shopping for was cream buns, and they get a giant package of cream buns, go back to her flat, and she would strip off and throw these cream buns at this naked lady, and we all said, what a waste of cream buns. But that was the brand of humour. Yeah.
Now, any other entertainment or new things?
We had some gramophones from the Red Cross and music. Most of the classical music. We clear somebody out of the hut, and it was called by those who didn't like it, trance music, because everybody would listen to it very quietly and discreetly. It was interesting to see through the notice board by the cookhouse, we had a quiz on what sort of entertainment did you like, and it put down the various types that there was, drama, jazz, and so on, were all put up, and it put your name in and say which you preferred, your order of preferences 1 and 2, and it was remarkable that drama and classical music came out top.
Tell me a bit more about this notice board, because it sounds like it has quite a... I mean, we've mentioned notice board
before. The Daily Record, it was called.
Tell me about it. How important was it? How in the running of, obviously not the escape side, but in the running of the sort of peacetime camp, you know,
domestic.
How important was it?
I think it was very important. It was changed every other day or something like that, or whenever a news came that was publishable, it was put up there.
And who would run it, control it?
We had editors. We had people who'd been in the newspaper business. I mean, there were several of them.
And they'd control what people put up?
Oh, yes.
So you couldn't just put up any old rubbish?
Oh, no. It was very much controlled. No one other than through the RECO editing office.
And would they put up, was it just entertainment or was it education as well? I mean, we've already talked about
any
education.
Any notices, football,
sport,
team, sports and everything like that. It's quite a large notice
board. Dimensions, roughly?
Oh, a metre, at least a metre by 3/4 of a metre size.
So it was 3 foot by 2'6" Now, what about hobbies? Because that's another part of camp life that we haven't touched much, although your escaping activities can be seen as a hobby. But what hobbies were there? What did you do?
I tried to learn German without too much success.
Now, tell me about that.
I got a book through the Red Cross to teach myself German.
Now, what was your problem?
Time and money. Well, I think my major activity was, of course, building radios.
We will come on to that.
Yes, but that took a lot of my time. It was my interest.
So you didn't manage to learn German?
I got,
how far did you get?
Oh, I made myself understood, yes. I think so, yes.
But no chance of passing yourself off as German?
Not at that stage, no. I think I could do it now, but...
But not you then. Just learned the beginnings, yes.
Yes.
What other hobbies did you have,
painting.
Or what did other people have? Well, painting.
Painting. Yes, I used to paint, I'll show it to you in a minute, Christmas cards. We used to get a card every month to write home on. And I would, for Christmas time, I would paint the thing with poster paints that I got from some chum who got them in his parcel, and I like painting. So
was it just the Christmas cards you painted, or would you paint other things during the rest of the year?
I didn't have time, so I was very busy. I made myself very busy. I had devoted my time to exercising, to keep myself fit, and I played rugby and ice hockey.
So it was just really at Christmas you painted?
Painted, yes.
Before Christmas?
Yes, before Christmas.
Now, were there any other hobbies other people had that were noteworthy?
Yes. I made a model yacht too. I was very keen to say.
Tell me about that.
Well, I carved it out of a chunk of wood and so on. Made a hollow boat, a yacht about 18 inches long. The sails made out of handkerchiefs, and then sailed it on the fire pool.
Now tell me about the fire pool as well. Was this common on the fire pool?
Yes,
what was the fire pool?
It's still in being today. the shell. It was a very large brick one. I suppose it'd be sort of 12, about 30 foot by square. And quite deep, enough for a fire engine to come along and put the hose, soaker hose in. But we were allowed to use it when we weren't being scolded by the Germans.
Now, did a lot of people make yachts and things?
Yes. Johnny Bristow was another wonderful character. He made wireless. He wasn't radio expert. But he could make things if under direction, and he made some wonderful things. He made a model motorboat, which was about over a metre long, out of tin cans opened up and made as pieces of the hull, soldered together, and he even made a steam engine, and the cylinder of which was a piece of clothes out of a wardrobe. Someone had cut a hollow tube out of a wardrobe, and he cut that up and cast the pistons inside of that, and had a little fat lamp under for the boiler, and the whole thing chugged, and the whole thing was driven by steam.
It actually worked. Did the motorboat, was that powered?
Yeah, by the steam engine.
But it was inside...
The little steam engine was inside the motorboat. And there's some very good... The Poles were very good at carving, and they built some beautiful chess sets built out of laminated toothbrush handles to form the chess set. And they were very good at making rings. They would make a whole series of red and white pieces to form the checker, the four pieces of checker on the Polish flag, the red, the white and red.
Now these were Polish aircrew.
RAF, but in the...
And carving Polish, was their thing.
They were very good at that. They produced some beautiful carveries. And they would sort of glue all these together and then saw them off and put them into rings and things like that. And they held an exhibition in their hut of things carved and made most impressive. And the Germans were very impressed. And of course, I did a lot of, used to make a lot of cap badges, German cap badges and so on.
For escape attempts?
Yes. Okay.